Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play. Make sure you subscribe to us, leave a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe to us, tell your friends to listen, all that good stuff. If you want to advertise with us, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. You can send us questions there as well to answer on the show. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls and on Facebook also at Locked On Bulls. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, the return of Tom Thibodeau is tomorrow.
It indeed is. Tibbs back at the United Center for the first time as an NBA coach prowling the sidelines with such a team. His Minnesota Timberwolves not doing well at 6-18, still with a very bright future. But it is a key date on the calendar, one we all circled.
It's kind of the last one because we had the Rose Noah game. Yeah. We had Dwayne Wade going back to Miami. To a lesser extent, we had Pau Gasol coming back with the Spurs.
Certainly. And this is the second time Tibbs is going to be back at the United Center in a coaching capacity. He was here with Team USA as an assistant over the summer and I believe an exhibition game against Brazil. It wasn't a big to-do or anything like that. There was a lot of questions media-wise before that, but there was a nice ovation before the game, but you didn't have the specter of the Bulls organization really there at the game. That many Bulls fans, a lot of just basketball fans in general, gave him a good ovation. But this is going to be weird, Sean, because again, he's overseeing a team right now that's 6-18, and he's going to get probably an electric ovation on Tuesday nights when starting lineups and coaches are introduced.
Right, and I still really want to see, you know, what I'm sure Game Ops has just orders from management to not show him at all on the Jumbotron, except, I mean, I guess they might have to when they do the introductions and say that head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves is Tom Thibodeau. They probably have to show him then, but since then, I'm pretty sure they probably are not going to be allowed to show him anymore.
Yeah, and that brings up, I guess, a bigger point that at every turn since, what was it,
May 2015,
the Bulls fired him in unceremonious fashion, the most unceremonious fashion you could possibly ever have in a press release. Tibbs has taken the high road every single time, every single turn since then when he's been asked about the Bulls. You can tell he never says anything complimentary about management. He leaves them out of every quote because he didn't get along with Gar Foreman and John Paxson very well by the end of his time in Chicago, which is why he moved on and was fired. But he still says he respects Jerry Reinsdorf so much every time he gets a chance, even though Reinsdorf scorched him in the press release when they fired him, talking about the departure of culture from just an inclusive organization, having opinions and sharing them, and kind of territorial turf stuff that Reinsdorf said that Tibbs wasn't welcoming of others, if you remember that. And then Gar Foreman infamously said in the press release that the Bulls had had some success with Tibbs as coach. He had 255 wins as a Bulls coach.
They made sure to put his playoff record in the
23-28. They did not make a note that his MVP, Derrick Rose, didn't play in most of those playoff games.
But yeah, you did make the point that he has been very complimentary of Jerry. And first of all, I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf wrote that press release. It was attached to his name, but I think there's probably a 0% chance that he actually wrote it.
He approved it. He had to read the whole thing.
He approved it, but I mean,
that falls on Jerry in my mind.
But so, this is like not only just, you know, when Jerry was inducted into the Hall of Fame, Thibodeau was at that, at the induction ceremony, not necessarily for him, but he was there. He said this at his press conference when he was being introduced as the head coach of the Timberwolves. I've talked to him about it. He has said this on and off the record. he will always be grateful to Jerry Reinsdorf because Jerry Reinsdorf gave him his first opportunity to be a head coach in the NBA. He had been an assistant for 20 years, kind of bouncing around.
A lot of teams passed over.
Minnesota, Houston, New York at various points before he got to Boston, where he obviously had a lot of success under Doc Rivers. And his first head coaching job, I mean, he had a couple of offers that summer. He got offered, if I remember this correctly, he got offered the job with the New Orleans Hornets after they fired Byron Scott. And he turned that job down because he had also offers from the Bulls and the New Jersey Nets, both of whom were in the LeBron James
sweepstakes
in terms of that free agency, because that was the summer that LeBron and Wade and Bosch all went to Miami. And then he ended up obviously picking Chicago, and it worked out pretty well for him.
Certainly did. And I was just thinking, I mean, the Bulls, if they wanted on Tuesday night when they host the Timberwolves, they could close the chapter on the Tibbs era altogether by giving him a short shout-out in some form.
A tribute video.
Which we don't expect by any means. Oh. We don't expect anything on the Jumbotron or Banner era. But if they just wanted to end it and, like, make this
take the
good,
high road.
Yes. Just once both sides take the high road, I feel like that, even sports, even in other chapters of life, that's when, like, the book officially closes in a way. But, I mean, let's be certain. Both sides still have a great deal of disdain and hatred for each other in how it all played out by the end. And Tibbs, again, has taken the high road every time, but that passion still burns for him. And he just can't believe it, I don't think, how they, what he felt was an invasion of his coaching territory, probably, and micromanaging. And, I mean, look, he's not an easy person
no,
to
there
get
was,
along with
there
on,
was
ab- on a personable, person-to-person basis.
There was absolutely fault on both sides in the divorce. I remember this one time, his last year in Chicago, they lost a game in Oklahoma City, and Joakim Noah didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. And afterwards, he was asked why Joe didn't play in the fourth quarter, and he basically said something to the effect of, well, I ran out of minutes in my minutes limit. So he would do stuff like that to prove a point about how he didn't like management and the medical staff having a say in how many minutes he could play guys. So it was a breakup that, as great of a coach as he is and as respected as he is and as much success as he had, it was a breakup that needed to happen. I don't think either side is blameless, and that's pretty easy to say, I think, with a lot of certainty. But the other thing is, I mean, if you remember, Cody, when the, you know, in the months before the Bulls fired him in 2015, the fan base was kind of divided about, you know, whether, you know, he's getting a raw deal or, oh, he needs to go, he's running guys into the ground, and, like, they're just never going to get over the hump. You know, I would say his approval rating was probably about 50% by the time he got fired among fans. After the way that the first year under Fred Hoiberg went last year with, you know, with Jimmy calling him out in December after the loss to the Knicks, and
missing
then obviously
the
they missed the playoffs for the first time since 2008, I think maybe looking back in hindsight, you know, even though this team is successful right now and they're doing well, I think the perception of Tom Thibodeau among Bulls fans has probably only grown since.
Huge shift. I would say it's like 90-10 now.
Yeah.
Like,
I would.
Tibbs
he's going to get a, gonna get a like massive ovation tomorrow, man.
He deserves that, too.
He does.
647 winning percentage is outstanding, especially when you consider, that's what he had in his 5 years in Chicago, especially when you consider he did it without Derrick Rose because of Derrick's knee injuries for so
the
long.
The 2 years.
That's spectacular.
The 2 years that he had a fully healthy team with, you know, with Derrick Rose playing an MVP level before the injuries, both of those years, they had the best record of the Eastern Conference. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals his first year in 2011. This is by far the most success that the Bulls have had as an organization since Michael Jordan retired.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that's a well-deserved ovation he'll get from the fans. And it's interesting to me because he took that, we talked about the approval rating shot up. Like, Tibbs, what he did for a year was take a sabbatical and just tour basketball teams and programs and factories and all over the country, getting to know people and all of this stuff. And I mean, he probably unwound a little bit because he didn't have to watch quite as much
right
film.
I read the big Jonathan Abrams feature on him in Bleacher Report a couple months ago about how he would always go see movies. But, you know, he would just kind of go and, you know, he
like
spent
13 or 14 teams
he spent some time. I mean, he spent some time around the Hornets with Steve Clifford. He spent some time around Houston. He spent some time around Golden State where his buddy Ron Adams, Ron Adams' dismissal a few years ago was kind of the start of the
contentious
friction between
relationship
front office. But his buddy Ron Adams is an assistant coach under Steve Kerr there. He spent some time in Sacramento.
He went to a lot of places.
A lot of different places.
And the narrative came up. I mean, just by being gone and the Bulls struggling, that made, I think, Chicago fans appreciate Tom more than maybe the casual fan did at the moment that he left, because you did hear so much just about the friction and how he was kind of a difficult person to deal with. But to me, it's interesting. The narrative came that Tibbs has changed. He's a new man. He's a new coach. He learned a lot. Like, that kind of happened, like, when he was coming back to the NBA. And maybe I shouldn't say the narrative was he has changed. It's like, Tibbs is on the brink of changing. Look at all this stuff he learned. Is he a new coach? Didn't you pick up on that? And I don't Absolutely. Think that's the case.
Absolutely. And I will say, though, to his credit, one of the biggest criticisms that I had of him over the last few years when he was in Chicago as a coach was that he would kind of over-rely on some of his veterans, even, you know, to the, like, maybe, you know, Etuan Moore maybe could have gotten more of a look under him, and kept giving Kirk Heinrich a lot of minutes because he knows veterans and he trusts veterans. I was a little bit skeptical, especially with, you know, when he took the job with Minnesota, he was the coach and the president, so he was going to have say over personnel. I totally thought that this past summer, he was just going to go out and try to get Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and Pau Gasol and just, like, all of his guys that he had in Chicago, and pay them a lot of money and play them a lot of minutes when maybe they should be playing, like, Zach LaVine or Andrew Wiggins or Shabazz Muhammad or Gorgui Dieng or whoever more time. Like, I thought that was kind of how it was going to go. I have to say, I liked the job that he did, you know,
personnel-wise,
this summer, personnel-wise, you know,
president of basketball
they didn't really do a whole lot. They picked up Cole Aldrich, a pretty solid backup center, you know, just little around the margin stuff like that. And he was very honest, both, you know, in his press conference and also when I talked to him in Las Vegas at Summer League, basically saying, this is a team, this Timberwolves team, won 29 games last year. You're not going to expect them to turn around and become a contender overnight. Even Oklahoma City, those first couple Durant-Westbrook years were pretty rough.
Yeah, and it's a little catch-22 for Tom, because when he entered Chicago, he did kind of have Taj and Joakim Noah were, and Derrick Rose as well, obviously, with that MVP season, Tom's first year in Chicago. Like, they were a little more developed than these Minnesota guys, obviously. A lot of these second-year guys in Minnesota and such. And Tom always wants to win, and he always wants to win now. So that you pointed out that they didn't make any unwise choices in free agency throwing money around was a good thing for them. But he's a guy, again, that wants to win. That's why I don't think he's changed. Because, look, he's got three guys that rank in the top 19 in the NBA in minutes played per game.
Towns, Wiggins, LaVine.
You got it. LaVine's actually number two in the NBA. So there are 16 NBA teams that don't have a single player playing more minutes than those three. So in how he coaches out there, the decisions he makes on the sidelines, he hasn't changed. You know what I mean? Like he's already saying a lot of the same things as their defense falls apart. Like, we're not making the rotations. We're not playing with heart. We're not playing with grit. Like, he's the same guy.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, the point about him playing his guys heavy minutes is well taken, Cody. But I don't think it's really fair to compare that to some of the concerns that we had about the amount of minutes that he played guys in Chicago. Because, I mean, look, if you look at the teams, he's got, like, Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, Zach LaVine. These guys are young and healthy, and the whole, like, what you want out of this year is for those guys to get a lot of experience and play a lot of minutes. This is not like, you know, he was playing Luol Deng a ton of minutes after he had had all those injuries, or, you know, Joakim Noah basically playing on one foot in the playoffs a couple of years back, or stuff like that, or, you know, Jimmy Butler playing 48 minutes in a preseason game.
That was like Jimmy's rookie or second season. That's okay. We can excuse that.
Right,
that's
but
still
like,
an all-time.
Right, see, I have a little bit less of a problem with Tom playing these guys heavy minutes when it's like, these are, I mean, let's say okay, they're playing too many minutes. Who would you rather have him play minutes? You want them to put Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins.
I don't have a grand problem with it either. I just don't think he's changed as a coach or person in any way in that off year. And I think in time he's going to win and win big. I don't know if it means championship in Minnesota, considering the juggernaut the Warriors have and how strong the Western Conference just has been in past years. But they're going to be really successful. I still think when they're really successful, they're going to do it his way. The problem right now is they're not making much defensive progress at all early in the season. They have the second worst defensive rating in the NBA, which I imagine just drives them absolutely nuts. And they're allowing the second highest opponent field goal percentage in the NBA, which is a little surprising considering they do have Karl Anthony Towns, who's regarded as a good, promising, burgeoning defender, and Gorgui Dieng, who is a decent defender from everything I've heard and seen and read. I don't know how much you've watched him, but the defensive end's their problem right now.
It is, but and I think that the thing with the Timberwolves is, you know, Wiggins, who's one of their, you know, him and Towns, I think, are the two guys they're building this whole team around. Sure. Wiggins, I mean, Towns has been incredible, and Towns still is a once-in-a-generation talent. I think he's going to be an MVP candidate in the league for years to come. But Wiggins, I think at both ends of the floor, has regressed a little bit from maybe where people thought he would be at this point. He's not defending the way, you know, he has the skills to. His offense has taken a step back. You know, some of these other guys, Chris Dunn, who I know they were very high on, Tom was very high on in the draft, and the Bulls allegedly tried, you know, he was allegedly part of the Jimmy Butler trade discussions that went on between the Bulls and the Timberwolves. He has not been good. Ricky Rubio has dealt with some injuries. This is a very young team. It's a team, you know, obviously I think Towns is the one sure thing that they have on the roster. Sure. Everybody else, you don't know.
Yeah,
how
mean,
good they're going to be.
Wiggins is going to be good. You don't know if he's a sure thing as far as star level.
Right.
But he's obviously a foundational piece. But I think some of it, too, comes back to what Taj Gibson actually kind of marveled at today in practice was how quickly the Bulls bought in Tom's first season in 2010-11 in Chicago. And, I mean, he made reference to that a couple times, and he said, we really bought into what Tom wanted to do. Not every team is capable of doing that, especially with the way the NBA is and how players are selfish these days. But as a team, we bought in the first couple of years, and that's why we had some good years. I don't know if the Timberwolves are doing that yet.
See,
and you can't help but read those quotes and also think, did the Bulls buy into Fred Hoiberg completely last year?
Well, I think we kind of know the answer to that question. They know they didn't.
No.
Now, for some context, I was at practice today, Cody, and that question wasn't so much about the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the guys are selfish these days. I don't think that was a shot at the Timberwolves.
I think
that question, especially
in general, he's saying.
I think that question, I mean, it was a question about whether, you know, the Bulls had, you know, this adjustment period when they hired Tom to replace Vinny Del Negro, who was there Taj's rookie year. And I think Taj was saying that, like, no, they bought in right away because they were already going to buy in. Like, I think he was saying that to avoid taking shots at Vinny Del Negro. I think that's more what that was than any commentary on guys being selfish these days or not. But if you remember
Statue
that Bulls,
of limitations has passed. You can that, take no. shots at Vinny Del Negro if you want.
I think you can. He's already had and lost another coaching job.
And been through, like, four broadcasts.
Right. But if you look at the Bulls team that first year, that first Thibodeau year, you know, there were a lot of, obviously you had Derrick Rose, who was the MVP that first year, and then you had a lot of veterans on that team. You had Carlos Boozer, you had Kyle Korver, you had Kurt Thomas, Keith Bogans, you know, all they had guys on. This wasn't nearly as much of a young team. A lot of more veteran guys were playing rotation minutes, and even Taj, that was only his second year in the league, but he was a pretty old rookie, so he was pretty mature. And then, you know, same thing with guys like Joakim Noah, who had been, you know, several multiple year college players who weren't one and done guys. When you combine those with, like, the kind of physical talent that Derrick Rose was before the injuries, like, it's easier to see how that was maybe a team more predisposed to buy in. If you look at this Timberwolves team that he's got right now, the most veteran guy on that team, I'm pretty sure, is Cole Aldrich, who is, I mean, he's an okay backup, but he's not the kind of guy like, you know, a Kyle Korver or a Carlos Boozer, who has a track record of being a starter and a good locker room guy and a good teammate. It almost makes me wonder if the Bulls are gonna, or not the Bulls, the Timberwolves are gonna try to trade and get a veteran guy. Like,
a few whispers and fringe reports already surfaced that Tibbs kind of wants to add veterans.
In fact, you know what? We have,
like, at this point, they're out of the playoff race.
Right. They're not. I think they're not going to make the playoffs. And I thought that before the season. I was very high on their potential. But, like, I always thought, I mean, our buddy Tim Bontemps, I don't feel bad at all about throwing him under the bus here, because he has been very, he was very vocal. He wrote it. He tweeted. He said it on the record.
50 wins.
He thought they were going to win 50 games. Pretty much everybody said that was outrageous. That's obviously.
Tim has since thrown himself
under
the bus.
He's
for
definitely
that prediction.
Cop to, you know, maybe that prediction didn't hit on the mark. But, you know, there was hype around this team, and I still think, like, they have a trajectory, you know, provided that they're secondary guys. Because, like I said, Towns is a superstar. Towns is a sure thing, but, like, provided some of these other guys, you know, Wiggins, Levine, Gorgui Dieng, some of these other guys develop the way that, you know, we see them developing, and they have the talent to develop into, this could be the next, you know, Oklahoma City Thunder, like, team that builds through the draft and takes a few years to get there, but eventually down the line is a contender in the Western Conference for years to come. It's just, if you look at, I mean, that first Durant-Westbrook year in 2008-09, they won 23 games. They were not good overnight.
Certainly. There's the indelible image, too, in Thunder history, of their fans giving them a standing ovation when their season ended in Game 6 to the Lakers in, was it maybe 09 or 10?
That was 10.
In 10, with that young team. And, like, that's what the Timberwolves are aspiring to get to. Like, that's the thing. Tibbs is going to have to show a lot of patience, you know what I mean? Because not an overnight project, which the first quarter of the season has kind of shown. And, you know, veterans would help. And I go back, and we were talking about Taj earlier. I crack up because, like, this is one of my favorite Tibbs memories, is when Taj played through the torn ligament in his hand in 2014-15. Tibbs last year, even as it was kind of unraveling for the Bulls, not so much on the court because they did go to the Eastern Conference semifinals and play pretty strong basketball for the most part that season, but off the floor when the rumors and reports of rifts were surfacing, Taj had told Tom he had a torn ligament in his hand, and Tibbs told him, "You're Brooklyn tough. You can play through it." So Taj just did it. Like, that relationship.
He just, like, let that slip.
That relationship between those two is just something that is unique.
And it's worth noting that there were only a few guys on the team, because from everything I've been told, management had basically already made the decision by the end of the year they were going to fire Tom. And they had exit interviews with all the players, and most of them either were kind of done with him or didn't care one way or the other whether he stayed or went. The two guys that fought for him, I think, were Derek and Taj. And Derek was because, you know, all the criticism that he faced about how, you know, he was being cautious with the injuries. Tom defended him every single time to the media and to the public and all that kind of stuff. Taj is just such a loyal guy. He was a defender of Thibodeau till the end, and he was also the biggest defender of Fred Hoiberg last year through, you know, when he was getting some criticism and all the Jimmy stuff was happening.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because Joakim Noah, since moving to New York, recently said, like, you come to appreciate Tibbs more when you two aren't together anymore. Did you? I don't know if you saw those comments.
I did.
But I'm paraphrasing here, but he made them in the context of, I think, the Timberwolves might have been in the area.
The Timberwolves played the Knicks a couple days ago.
And Joakim just said, you know, Joakim's referenced several times that time Tibbs had said, Joe told him, "I hate you, Tibbs." And Tibbs is like, "Well, you know what? You're going to miss me when you don't have me around someday." And then Noah said, like, you know, that proved to be true.
Well,
he's realized that.
Right. Well, I mean, and it certainly probably helps Tibbs' case in Joe's mind that, you know, Joe was one of the guys who was kind of done with him by the end of it, because, you know, he was playing through that knee injury that last year, and, you know, he was kind of burned out. But then if you look at how badly last year went for him with Hoiberg, where they got off on the wrong foot right away when Fred moved him to the bench and then told Zach Lowe, I told a reporter that it was Joe's idea, and that kind of alienated Joe because it didn't actually go out that way, and then he had that injury. I'm sure looking back, you know, even during last year before he left and went to New York, he was probably thinking, you know, when he was not playing as much and coming off the bench, he was like, "Well, I kind of miss Tibbs right now."
About Tibbs is, I mean, he's direct. As a player, I think you always knew pretty much where you stood with him. And he would... Wait, you got something to say?
Yeah, but I think the other part of it with Tibbs is, as much as, you know, he can wear on guys because he has a really strong personality, and, you know, he's relentless and he's hard-nosed and all this kind of stuff, and he's kind of stubborn, but I think the reason that he didn't lose guys, because, I mean, there were some guys that quit on him, but it wasn't like an outright mute, like, you know, an outright just every single
like
player.
The 2014 Chicago Bears.
Right, the 2014, sure. The 2014 Chicago Bears or the Pistons, that was 2010 that they kind of literally had like a mutiny where they all walked out of shooting.
A literal mutiny.
We'll have Vinny on sometime to talk about that, but I think the reason that Tibbs resonated with guys as much as he would kind of frustrate them sometimes is because he always gave off the impression, at least to me and to, you know, different players that I've talked to over the years since I've been covering the team, if you show up every day and you put in the work, he's going to have your back. He's not going to... I mean, if you compare that, and we talked about this, me and Anthony Irwin, when he did the Bulls-Lakers Locked On crossover a few weeks ago, we were talking about kind of how Byron Scott would, like, throw guys under the bus and just talk about how they weren't tough enough, and, you know, and some of these young guys would just never get a chance from him. Tom would give you a chance, and if you showed up and you put in the work, maybe you weren't going to get a lot of playing time, but he would never call out guys to the media and say, "Oh, well, this guy isn't working hard enough, or this guy needs to step up," or, you know, he would always defend his guys in public, and that was something that I think a lot of guys respected, even if he would wear on them eventually.
Yeah, and I mean, he, like, basketball is life for Tibbs, and I mean, we say that, and sometimes it's an exaggeration, but I mean,
that's true, though.
You go back to the question we asked him once, a Bull was out, someone was sick or something, and someone had a follow-up question to Tibbs and was like, Do you ever remember missing a basketball game in your career at any level stemming back to childhood for any reason? And he said, no. And he was just 100% serious. There was like no follow-ups. Like, that's the number one thing he values is like reliability and consistency. Another story on that was, always had Derek's back, but the one time Derek had travel problems getting back from the All-Star break or All-Star weekend, whatever, right, and missed a practice, like, you could, like, see the steam coming out of Tibbs' ears because his star player just wasn't at practice, and it was no fault of Derek's own, other
like
than
he
maybe
had
he should have had an earlier
travel
flight,
stuff, yeah,
got ahead a little sooner, but, like, it wasn't like he was out partying or anything. He just had travel issues. But you could, like, that's what Tibbs loves, just the consistency. Whether it's at practice, on the court, it's icing every time defensively, following the game plan to a T. And he had that in Chicago, and I think he loved it. He valued it. By the end, he saw it starting to slip apart. By the end, he had a defense with Pau Gasol as an anchor. And that's the fifth and final year for Tibbs in Chicago is when the defense became very un-Bull-like. Much more average instead of
they were top.
Great.
They were top five the first 4 years in the league. They were number one a couple of those years. It was either fringe top 10 or outside of the top 10 his final
like it
year.
It started slipping. And I think that's another aspect of this. By the end, like, he could tell personally that his grip was slipping because his style, I don't know that you can ride that style for 10 years in the NBA in a way that you can a Greg Popovich and Eric Spoelstra. Some people who have maybe a lighter side, coaches like that. And I mean, it's a testament to Rick Carlisle, who people consider a pretty tough coach in Dallas, that he's lasted as long as he has, with kind of approach that's probably, would you say, maybe in the same realm as Tibbs' style a little bit in that regard, just demanding of players and very serious tone. And at least from my perspective, in Tibbs, by the end of it, I think he felt that slipping a little bit too, that grip.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all, you know, there are other examples of coaches who just have that personality that just wears on guys. Scott Skiles is another one in Milwaukee. He kind of lost guys by the end of it. He
quit his job in Orlando over a point guard, right?
Yeah, this is who Tom is, and it's what makes him successful. So what you're saying, Cody, is that the magic is in the work.
It's always in the work,
and that you can't skip any steps.
Can't ever skip any steps. How many other of these you got?
And then if you put everything you have into each and every day, the results will take care of themselves.
That's three. You got four.
If you practice well, you play well.
Is there a fifth one? Is this the five commandments of Tibbs?
You have more than enough to win.
Oh, that's a good
one. Next man up.
That's true. I liked the I always liked the in or out of the circle analogy.
Well, that wasn't a recurring one. Like
yes,
the other
this yes, this wasn't. It was not a mantra. It was when Tibbs would get mad, he would reference the circle. You're either in and out, in or out of it, and depending on how guys played that night and who Tibbs had played that night with the game on the line, you could usually tell who was inside and outside of the circle at that moment in time, couldn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, Kirk Heinrich was always in the circle. That's Taj true. Gibson, always in the circle. Jimmy Butler, always.
Well, yeah,
more or less in the circle.
Yeah, once Jimmy.
Luol Deng, when he was there, he was definitely always in the circle.
You brought up Jimmy Butler, another classic one. Jimmy Butler's most improved player award ceremony is in, like, what, a three-piece suit that costs thousands of dollars, and this was a couple hours after practice.
This was this
Gar
was,
Foreman in a
this
suit.
This was like 2 weeks before Tom got fired. So
yeah.
Gar, my everlasting memory of that
Tibbs
conference was Tom and Gar were sitting next to each other, yes, just not talking or looking at each other the entire time.
Yes, and then, like, was it like a Kia representative well-dressed, and then Tibbs in his basketball warm-ups, basically, his sweatshirt.
I mean, if there wasn't the rules about what coaches had to wear, I think Tom would be coaching games in the Adidas tracksuit, like his boy Bill Belichick always has.
Certainly.
A hoodie.
I think he likes the Team USA polo shirt.
The Team USA polo is a Tibbs staple. He had the Bulls polo that he wore at times, but it was the tracksuit most of the time.
Yep, for certain. I think that takes care of most of our Tibbs talk. There's a couple maybe Bulls topics we should round back on. They're pretty much all healthy, save for Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah, nothing new from
RJ Hunter has been recalled from the D-League on Sunday because all hands got to be on deck when Tibbs is at the United Center, and by that I mean it was a procedural move we expected, and he'll probably be inactive anyway for the game, but
how many minutes do you think Jimmy plays tomorrow?
Oh, he'll play 40. Won't he play 40?
If he's at the over-under at 39.5, you got to take
the
over.
I think Jimmy will be out there a lot. I think the Bulls know this game means a lot. I think Taj will be playing a lot, and I don't know if it's going to be a direct, not a direct mandate to Fred, but I mean, I think everyone in the Bulls organization really wants to win this game.
So what do you, and I'm sure Tom, I mean, it's mutual. Tom probably really wants to win this game more than any other game on the schedule. What do you think, win or lose?
I think the Bulls will win. Let's go Bulls by 7.
I actually think they're going to lose.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? You think it's Tibbs'
night? Just because.
You think it's... It would be in Bulls' fashion of the past couple of years to lose this game, but they, for the most part, taken care of business when they needed to. Did want to make a note. KC Johnson of the Chicago Tribune had an interview with Taj Gibson that addressed a little bit about Taj's impending unrestricted free agency that's coming up next summer. Taj reiterated that he wants to remain a Chicago Bull. Taj is 31 years old right now, I believe, so be 30, age 32 next season. Not sure if that's in the cards for him or not. I think it's still too early to tell. I think we'll know more later in the year. But Taj did say, you know, basketball, it's going to take care of itself. He wants to stay in Chicago, and he's in the final year of that four-year, I think, $33 million deal that had 38 with some incentives. There's a lot of money flooding that free agent market, and look, Taj can get a lot of that money because he's still a reliable guy and there's teams that will give him a lucrative multi-year deal. I don't know how much the Bulls will be willing to pony up, but in this discussion, too, is the progress of Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis when weighing this.
If I had to make a prediction right now, I don't think Taj Gibson will be on the Bulls next year. And I think it's just going to come. I mean, obviously, they love him. He loves the city. He loves this team. He would love to be back. I just don't think they're going to be willing to pay as much money as other teams are going to be willing to pay him, and he's on such a below-market contract right now. Like you said, he, you know, there's
yeah, the
salary cap. He's in the final year of that deal. The salary cap has gone way up since he signed that deal. Plenty of teams are going to be trying to, you know, they want him. You know, he has such a reputation around the league as such a good teammate and a reliable guy at both ends of the floor. And I also, honestly, I'd be a little bit worried about signing him to another.
A lot of ankle problems.
Well, it's just making me think about, you know, okay, the other, you know, high usage or highly, you know, guys with a lot of miles on them that are like defensive-minded guys that have been with the Bulls over the last few years. Joakim Noah got all that money from the Knicks this summer. He's been awful.
Yeah.
For the most part, Luol Deng got all that money from the Lakers this summer. He was okay in Miami the last couple of years, but he was on a kind of a cheaper deal. But he gets that big contract from the Lakers, and he's been terrible too. He was good last night against the Knicks, but he hasn't been good. And then I'm kind of worried that Taj is going to just be the same way, that whoever pays him his big payday this summer is going to get the downside of his career. He might have another couple of good years, but you know his body might break down at some point. If I were a team, I would, as great as Taj is, as good of a teammate as he is, as good of a locker room guy as he is, as good of a player as he is, honestly, I would be very squeamish about giving him a four-year deal with a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's something with Nico not developing and Bobby not developing, really.
No.
This year, I mean, that's a difficult question for the Bulls, and I mean, we get a lot of Taj Gibson trade questions all the time on Locked On Bulls. I think Ryan on Twitter is the latest to ask us specifically about Nico and Bobby getting traded. Like, just that power forward spot seems to be what the Locked On Bulls listeners love talking about regarding trades. But the Bulls want to evaluate Bobby and Nico further this year. So unless they get a deal they can't refuse, like the Tony Snell for Michael Carter Williams deal, they would rather evaluate and play the year out with those guys. And you have to ask the question, does Taj fit in your time frame for winning as well? Like, when you're going to be contending for Eastern Conference final berths, when you could realistically make the NBA Finals and make a run at it. And I don't know where that is. I think the Bulls need a big-name free agent for that to happen.
in the coming years.
I think what
to
they
contend
need
for any title.
I think what they need is for LeBron to retire. That's when the Bulls are going to be a contender again in the East if they put together a good roster and LeBron retires. Because as long as LeBron is in Cleveland, like I don't think
that's
really
so depressing as an executive, though.
It is. I mean, and obviously you play the games and you never know what could happen with injuries and stuff. But it's literally just LeBron is on the Cavs, so like other teams aren't. I mean, does anybody think that there's any shot that another team besides the Cavs is going to go to the finals this year or next year? No.
No, I'm looking forward to the Raptors hanging like 133 points on the Cavs in like game three of the Eastern Conference Finals before the Cavs start taking it seriously.
Well, that's exactly what happened last year. Cleveland wins the first two games. Toronto wins the two in Toronto. And the Cavs are just like, oh, we have to start trying now. And then they just wax them.
So we'll have all eyes on Tibbs at the United Center on Tuesday night. As always, you can follow Sean on Twitter, at Hyken, myself, at Cody Westerlund. Follow Locked On Bulls, right where you think so, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls. Our email address is at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. We got a Facebook page, Locked On Bulls, if that's where you like to find the podcast. Most of all, subscribe to us and tell your friends to subscribe.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, everywhere that you can find podcasts in general. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network, NBA, NFL, all the different NBA and NFL teams have their own shows, which you should check out, subscribe, listen, recommend to any friends who are fans of different teams that they check them out to get the inside scoop on their team. If you want to advertise with us, email us lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Subscribe to The Athletic to read my work. Check out 670thescore.com to check out Cody's work. And we will be back with you guys tomorrow night after the big game. Take it easy.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.